Hey, college football fans. This podcast is brought to you by Citi. And whether it's football or finance, teamwork matters, which is why Citi is proud to bring you college football's finest. The 2010 Rose Bowl game presented by Citi. This is the ESPNU College Football Podcast.
College Football Podcast.
Your host today, Ivan Maisel.
Hello and welcome to the ESPNU College Football Podcast. It's Tuesday, December 29th. This is Ivan Maisel, senior writer at ESPN.com. I'm live in Los Angeles where I'm covering the Rose Bowl, and live from Pittsburgh, PA, Beano Cook. How are you, Beano?
Excellent, excellent. How was your flight? Did you have a... Well, you went out on Sunday, right?
I went out on Sunday, and my flight lasted about 3 days, it felt like, because I left from Kennedy. I actually left from Syracuse Sunday morning where I was visiting family, and was on a plane to Kennedy with Justice Sotomayor. So that was a very cool celebrity sighting. She has a family in Syracuse. And then made my way out here, and it's today it's sunny and gorgeous, which is what
it's supposed to be.
Well, I know. That's why we come to the Rose Bowl, I think. And certainly why I come to the Rose Bowl. Although it is a, it's going to be a great game, and we will get to that. But obviously, the news of the week, and I want to pick your brain about, is the on again, off again, resignation turned leave of absence of Florida coach Urban Meyer. It's a stunning story, isn't it?
Oh yes. I mean, what was amazing about it is the interest from just my friends who aren't from the Southeast. Caught up and wanted to know what was going on when it broke on Saturday night. I mean, these are friends from Pittsburgh and Ohio and everywhere else, and they said, "What's going on?" I mean, they could not understand it. This is what I think. I think that the reason they're saying he's going to be back next year is recruiting. Is one reason that they say, look, you know, a lot of freshmen won't play. Most of them won't. Most of them will be redshirted. Some will play. But they say, look, Coach Meyer won't be here this year, but he will be next year. Now, I hope he's back in 2011.
Yeah.
But it's like when a plane's at 30,000 feet and there's turbulence and the pilot says there's nothing to worry about. Until the plane lands, I don't believe him. So I believe Urban Meyer, but I'm not convinced he's going to be back.
In 2010, yeah.
That's how I feel. I mean, he's not 65. He's what, 45?
He's 45.
He's 46 this year. The one thing I thought that when I heard it, that he would be, he's from Ohio. He loves Ohio, Cleveland,
yes.
Browns. And I said, no, Urban Meyer's too smart. And he's not going to coach in the pros and have those egotistical players running around with their...
I wouldn't think so.
He's not going to do that.
No,
so,
I wouldn't think so.
No, and then I figured it had to be his health.
Well, you know what?
It had to be his health, and we all think of health. We think of cancer and said, oh, my God.
Yeah.
But then it isn't that. But I'm not convinced, Ivan. I don't know about you. I hope he's back.
Well,
because I love those. I love those Saban
Meyer showdowns.
Saban Meyer battles. I mean, we won't have it this year, and they play in October. Florida goes to Alabama.
Well, he might be back. He might be back.
We're going to have many of those. I'm not convinced. I hope I'm wrong, but
yeah.
I'm not convinced. I'm not saying he's not going to come back.
Right.
But I want the plane to land.
Well, the two things I thought of, you know, one, I wanted to bounce off you just because I love the historic parallel, is that, you know, Frank Leahy retired at age 45 because of health reasons. Did he not?
He was a class of 31 at Notre Dame, and he after the 1953 season.
Yeah, I think he was born in 1908, if memory serves me. But at any rate, he was probably...
You're right, yeah.
Yeah.
So he was 40. I guess he must have worked, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Exactly.
That struck me. And the other thing is, and let me explain a little bit where I'm going with this. When you and I talked yesterday, I was mystified as to how he could make these life-changing decisions over the course of last week, announce them on Saturday night, you know, have his daughters, you know, the quotes in the New York Times to Pete Famel were that my daughters were, you know, I have my daddy back, and you know, he's going to take care of his health. He was going to spend more time with his family, and he goes to practice Sunday and changes his mind. You know, and it took just going to practice, and I thought, I just don't understand that. So last night I spent a little time with Chip Kelly, the Oregon coach, after the Lowry's Beef Bowl, which is a Rose Bowl tradition where each team goes to Lowry's.
Oh yeah, what was that like?
You're in a beautiful old school restaurant in Los Angeles, and they bring out these, as my 12-year-old says, ginormous slabs of prime rib, and they slice them right there in the dining room, and they have giant cranes that lift the beef and put it on the plate. Now, that's an exaggeration, but just these enormous slabs of prime rib with mashed potatoes and cream corn, and kids can have as much as they want. I mean, and they are so delighted to be there, and it's such a grand old Rose Bowl tradition. It was actually, you know, the sort of thing you only see in college football.
When was the, do you know when the first year they did it?
This is the 54th. This was the 54th Beef Bowl. So, you know,
I think it
started after the war.
And the
owner of Lowry's who started it was there. All he said was he is older than Joe Paterno. So, He predicted an Oregon victory. I don't know. Perhaps when Ohio State was there, he predicted an Ohio State victory. But his prediction was overwhelming.
Last night. Time?
No, Ohio State went Sunday and Oregon last night.
Okay, but I
digress. So anyway, I'm talking to Chip, and I said, I said just what I'm saying to you. I don't understand how he could go to practice and all of a sudden change this whole epiphany he had. And Chip, without missing a beat, says, oh, I do. I said, well, what do you mean? But, you know, explain. He said, listen, he said, the two places I most like to be, he said, are on game day and on the practice field. He said, everything else is stuff I got to do.
Yeah, well, mainly recruiting.
Yeah, recruiting and media and boosters
and the media.
And NCAA, all that stuff. He said, you know, and you can't, he said, I tell my team all the time, you can't be a selective participant. If this is what you sign up for, this is what you do, and I understand that, and I do it. He said, but the two places I want to be are on game day and on the practice field. He said, that's what keeps me going. So, you know, in that sense, I can see, you know, after all this emotional tumult, that, you know, Meyer takes a deep breath. He gets out on the practice field and he kind of goes, "Oh yeah, you know, this is why I'm here. This is what I like to do." So, you know, given that, I understand it a little better. I still wonder. It's a story that has not ended. We don't know what's going to happen with him and how it will turn out, but, you know, we'll see what happens at signing day. We'll see what happens at spring ball, and here we go.
Yeah.
So, in a less bizarre story, but still odd, speaking of coaches and leaves of absence, and we have Mike Leach at Texas Tech, you know, being suspended by the university as they investigate his treatment of Craig James' son, the wide receiver, and we'll watch that and try to figure out, you know, wait to see what the university decides. You know, the one thought I had about this, Bino, is that was a very ugly, and we discussed this last winter, it was a very ugly contract negotiation between the university and Leach last year, and they played, the university played poker, and Leach pretty much won the bet. You know, they tried to push him around and failed, and, you know, I wonder if that attitude has anything to do with what's going on now.
They did a profile on him in 60 Minutes. Scott Kelly.
Yeah.
He went to Texas Tech. And they did a piece in 60 Minutes on him last year. He is different. And college presidents don't like to be pushed around and lose. So be curious to see what happens.
Yeah.
What did he exactly do? Do we know what he did?
Well, it has to do with the James' son, the wide receiver, suffering a concussion in practice. And then the tales vary as to what happened afterward. He says that Leach did not treat him properly, that he was shut off in a dark room and told that if he came out, he would, during practice, he would, he might lose his scholarship. It was the version, I believe, and I'm reciting this from memory. And was shut in a closet or in a small room at various, two different occasions. Leach says that they were treating him the way you treat a concussion, that you're supposed to be in a dark room, and disputes that characterization of what happened. And now the university is going to try to sort it out. So, it's a bizarre story. It's a bizarre case. And as SportsCenter reported today, if Leach is the coach on December 31st, the university owes him $800,000 as a bonus. So, you also have that clock ticking. It's just been we had a very quiet coach hiring season, Beano, and then the last week, over the last three or four days, it's just been crazy. But let's get to, what we really wanted, what every college football fan really wants to discuss this time of year, and it's the, turning on the TV and having hot and cold running bowl games all day, which really began in earnest tomorrow, Wednesday. There's two games. That's today. There's two games. Tomorrow there's two games. Then there's five on New Year's Eve, five on New Year's Day, five on Saturday the 2nd, and the big one, of course, the one that I think attracts the most attention annually, New Year's Day out here, Rose Bowl, Oregon and Ohio State. This is a classic traditional Rose Bowl matchup, and that you couldn't get two programs more different than Oregon and Ohio State. And it brings up that whole Midwest, West Coast, Big Ten power, Pac-10 speed argument that was so much of the Rose Bowl tradition and history, certainly of the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, this is really a Rose Bowl I'm looking forward to. And for Oregon to be favored in the Rose Bowl, I mean, for a regular season game, it could happen, but for Oregon to be favored over Ohio State. Now, they play in the 58 Rose Bowl.
Yes.
And Ohio State won 10-7, shared the national title that year. They were something like a 17 or 18-point favorite in that game, Ohio State. But to see Oregon favored over Ohio State in the Rose Bowl is something I'd thought might not ever happen, but it's happened, and it's a very interesting game. Oregon, to me, is the most exciting team I saw all year.
Yes.
It's just tremendous, but Ohio State's tough. Trestle will play it close.
Yes.
Try to make sure they don't make mistakes. They've done a good job with Pryor last part of the season. He's not throwing the ball away the way he was early. I guess that Purdue game was a disaster. And he's matured in this season. But he You know, he has to win this game. I mean, to me, winning at Penn State was a signature win, definitely.
Yeah.
But the Rose Bowl is a double signature win. But he has a signature win on the road, because the year before he fumbled, which gave Penn State, recovered, went in for the touchdown, and took the lead and won the game.
And so won the Big Ten title, yeah.
Yeah, Big Ten title.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think Pryor's from around here, on the way, Western Pennsylvania, and I kind of root for him. But I have to be honest, I'm rooting for Oregon. I think Ohio State will win. I think they're going to, not a big upset, but I love Oregon, and I love the Duck.
Yeah.
I love the Duck. I think the pictures of the year that they're putting in all the magazines and pictures of the decade. I don't see the one with Carson with the Duck.
Yes.
I mean, that to me was one of the great moments of the season. So I love the Duck in Eugene when he leads the team in the field of that scooter.
Yeah.
You've been there. That has to be... Oregon has to be some scene, and their fans will be here.
Oh,
their
yeah.
Their fans will be here.
Oh, yeah. Well, both fans will be here because
both state fans are everywhere.
Yeah, but they haven't been here in 12 years, and Oregon hasn't been here in 15 years. And
half of Ohio ends up living in either in the west coast of Florida or they go to California.
Yeah, that's true.
It's graduating, but Ohio State. And the main thing is the fans are going to get to see the dot in the eye, and that's always a thrill, no matter how many times you see it.
Well, and what I like about it, you've touched on it and I've touched on it, it's the classic New Year's Day Rose Bowl, and we both agree that we really miss the time when New Year's Day, when college football owned New Year's Day, and that was the ultimate day, the
they
final
have to
ultimate
get that
day.
Back.
Yeah.
When this all went down, and I've said this before on this show, that the BCS was going to spread the games out. It doesn't bother me at the time it did. It bothers me now. But a lot of people say to me, New Year's Day isn't the same. It used to start off with Lindsey Nelson from Dallas.
Yes.
On CBS and the Cotton Bowl. That's how far I go back.
Sure.
And I think we're going to eventually get it, some of it back, because eventually we're going to have a plus one. And I think two of the games will be on New Year's. I think that's going to happen. So you're going to get some of it back, but it isn't the same without those bowls. I mean, you remember the one year where this was in 1970. The day started with Texas number one. Ohio State number, no, it's from 70, it's 70. Texas number one, Ohio State number two, Nebraska number three, and USC number four, Notre Dame number four. Notre Dame beats Texas. Ohio State is now number one, Nebraska's number two, and Notre Dame's number three, Ohio State, a 10-point favorite, loses to Jim Plunkett. 27-17, Nebraska's number one, Notre Dame's number two. Notre Dame's watching the game. It's 12-10. LSU in the fourth quarter, Nebraska drives for the touchdown. That was the perfect day.
Yes.
It went right like that. And you've had other days like that.
Well, 1965.
No day like that.
Yeah, 1965, the famous story of Alabama being 8-1-1 and
yes.
Seemingly having no chance to win the national championship, and Bryant laid out to his team the scenario by which they could win the national championship. And it all
happened. Michigan State got beat in 14-12.
Yeah.
And Arkansas got beat by LSU, right?
Yeah.
I think 10-0.
Yeah, and then
Nebraska was number three, and Alabama was number four.
And Alabama just scorched Nebraska in the Orange Bowl that night. That's when the Orange Bowl wrapped everything up at night. And I think they were playing. That might have been an afternoon game back then. I don't remember.
It was night,
yeah. It was night.
What's his name? Ernie Siler.
Ernie Siler, sure.
He went in on both teams. He was playing for the national title.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
He went into both dressing rooms and said, you played for the national title.
Oh, that's tremendous. Yeah, well, yeah. Ernie Siler was Mr. Orange Bowl for many years.
Yeah, John Underwood did that story on him
and Sports Illustrated.
One of the great football writers.
Yeah.
I mean, they had that 1-2 punch with Dan Jenkins and John Underwood, and they tell us the story about when Kennedy came to the Orange Bowl, they brought down a chef. Down from Washington. Ernie Siler said to Secret Service, "Can I go in there? I want to see this sandwich." the Orange Bowl was something. They went tonight. ABC had the games, had them in the afternoon, and they wanted to go tonight. And ABC, Ron Arledge told me this. They lost so much money on the Dean. Lewis show, Jerry Lewis show.
Uh-huh.
It went on TV and it was a disaster. And they lost all that money and they were afraid to pay a lot more money for games at night. So the games went to NBC. The Orange Bowl went to the NBC and they had the Rose Bowl, and then Kirk Gowdy would keep talking about the Orange Bowl. I mean, we knew it was on. They keep promoting it. I wish our people at ESPN would get the Granddaddy of them all. Get that off there.
You're done
the
with
granddaddy
that?
Granddaddy of them all, 4:30 on ABC,
yeah.
The Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
The Granddaddy. I think people know that.
Yes, perhaps. Perhaps. Well, the other big game on January 1st, we talked about Urban Meyer in Florida earlier. Florida and Cincinnati playing in the Sugar Bowl on New Year's night, a game that was pretty dull and didn't have a lot of spark until this weekend, and now Florida is juiced up. In the middle of last week, Florida had not sold about 4,500 tickets to the Sugar Bowl, and the fans weren't interested, and I think now they might be a little more interested.
Florida fans, having worked in Florida for a while, and talking to sports writers who went to Florida. Florida fans never traveled the way Alabama and Tennessee. I mean, Alabama travels, Tennessee fans, they travel. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah, the bowl game could be in Jerusalem, and Tennessee or Alabama fans will be there if their team's in there.
They'd learn Roll Tide in Hebrew, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hear the Roll Tide roll in Jerusalem. Yes, that would be fun. But the Florida fans don't travel. Florida fans are not fanatics. The fans in the Southeast Conference, sure, Vanderbilt and Kentucky, but they didn't, they didn't win that much. So Florida fans were just kind of fair weather for the Southeastern Conference team. So good fans compared to fans from other schools and other conferences, but compared to Alabama, Auburn, Tennessee, LSU, Georgia, their fans aren't as fanatic. Now they might be.
Yeah, I think that's changed over the last 10 or 15 years with the rise of Spurrier and the continuance of Meyer.
Wayne.
Yeah.
I mean, the Alabama fan, Auburn fans are more loyal than your Alabama fans.
I agree. Yeah, I think Auburn fans, it's a unique feeling they have for their school and their university. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Monday night, Beano, Boise State, TCU, battle of the undefeateds. Do you feel that there is any way that the winner of this game could sneak in and win the AP National Championship?
No.
If Alabama and Texas have a lackluster game?
No.
Okay.
No way.
Yeah.
No way. I'm still, not upset, but I just came, why would they do this? TCU should be playing Florida, and Boise State should be playing Cincinnati. That's what the fans, fans don't want to see Boise State, TCU. They want to see the mid-level teams go in and beat the big boys. People loved it when Boise State beat Oklahoma.
Yes.
They loved it.
Yes, absolutely.
And last year, I don't know about Utah, Alabama, but the Boise State beating Oklahoma. I mean, those two teams should not be playing each other, Byron. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it was a rigged deal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's suspicious. Put it that way.
Well, I'm looking forward to the game. I think it'll be a great ball game.
No doubt it's not a great ball game.
Yeah, yeah.
Saying I want to see those two teams have a chance.
Yeah,
the big boys. That's all I'm saying.
That was one thing Chip Kelly said to me last night. He said, you know, everybody keeps referring to our loss to Boise State at the beginning of the season as a debacle. He said, and part of that was because, obviously, of the LeGarrette Blount deal at the end of the game. He said, but that was not a debacle. That team is undefeated. He said, and we only lost 19-8. He said, they've put up a lot of points and a lot of people. They only scored 19 on us. He said, you know, we didn't play well, but, you know, we hung in there with them. You know, they beat a lot of people a lot worse than they beat us. So
it was a road game, too.
And it was a road game, and it was, you know, the first game of the year, which is always scruffy.
They were sky high, Boise State.
Yes, they were. Yeah, that was their big moment.
Oh,
that was a good moment.
I want you to explain, and you taught me something I didn't know. You mentioned Oregon and the slotting, how the Pac-10
right.
permits their teams go to bowls.
Well, every
no other conference has this. Explain it.
Yeah, every other conference, they massage their standings to get the right bowls in the right, you know, the right teams in the right bowls. A great example of that this year, Florida State. You know, everybody wanted to send Bobby Bowden off the right way, and they sort of massaged Florida State into the Gator Bowl, even though there were several teams with better records, and so that the Seminoles and Bowden could play West Virginia, where he coached before he went to Florida State. And it's a great story, and that's a great example of how they mix and match. And every conference does that except the Pac-10. The Pac-10 looks at their standings, they line up their bowls, and that's where your teams go, regardless of whether that's the best fit in terms of selling tickets, in terms of fans traveling. So the champion, the champion goes to the Rose Bowl, the runner-up goes to the Holiday Bowl, that's where Arizona will play Nebraska. The third-place team after tie breaks was Stanford. Stanford went to the Sun Bowl, the fourth and fifth teams they alternate between the Emerald Bowl and the Las Vegas Bowl. USC went to the Emerald this year. Oregon State went to the Las Vegas, and that's how they do it. And I'm not really sure.
I mean,
it's been a few years, and I don't really know why they do it. I think they just decided that, you know, the standings should mean something.
Well, I can't disagree with that. That's right. I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And the Holiday Bowl is a pretty nice bowl to go to.
The Holiday Bowl is a great bowl.
San Diego isn't bad.
No.
Great place, yeah.
And I think that's going to be a tremendous ball game, Arizona. In Nebraska, they play tomorrow night, 8 o'clock Eastern.
I tell you, I had no idea. You're a fountain of information, my man. I mean, I had no idea, and I bet a lot of fans outside of the West Coast had no idea.
Well,
no idea.
Speaking of a fountain of information, Beano, let's look at the Hall of Fame birthdays. December 31st, New Year's Eve, Ray Graves, the great Florida coach, Steve Spurrier's college coach, and Don James, the dog father, who led Washington to the 1991 national championship, or at least a share of it. And I see Don usually once or twice a year. He's living in Palm Springs in the winter and in Seattle in the summer. He's looking great.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, so New Year's Day, Doak Walker, the the man who built the Cotton Bowl, you know, the house that Doak built, SMU great in the post-war era, and Don Nealon, the West Virginia coach, won, and Bowling Green in West Virginia won, I think he won 200 games. He's right up there anyway.
Very good, very good. He did a great job at West Virginia, got them to play for the national title.
That's right, 1988.
After the 98 season. And had another undefeated team, which Florida destroyed in the Sugar Bowl. But West Virginia is not an easy place to win.
No.
And he had two undefeated regular seasons. That's pretty good.
No, he
That's
did.
Pretty good.
He did. He built, you know, Miami and Syracuse and Pittsburgh were sort of seen when the Big East began as the foundation teams of that league, but West Virginia really came through for that league, and even after the departure of Miami and Boston College, and Virginia Tech.
A stupid move by BC, but yeah. I think, you know, a smart move by Miami and Virginia Tech. Idiotic move by BC.
West Virginia has been the... has been the bell cow team of that league, I think, in this decade. I mean, Rich Rodriguez did a great job. Bill Stewart has kept them winning and challenging for the conference title, challenging Cincinnati for the conference title. So, and then January 4th on Monday, Jess Neely, the coach for almost five decades at Clemson, and then Rice, and then Rhodes College, and a great coach, many good players,
and was there
forever.
Yeah, Rice. I forgot. I completely forgot that he coached at Clemson. I completely forgot that. Rice, with a small student body, competed in the Southwest Conference, and they played in, you know, went every so often went to Cotton Bowl. In fact, they had a back by the name of Dickie Mago, who one of those. And Mr. Lewis came off the bench in the Cotton Bowl when Alabama played him. And
that's right, Tommy Lewis.
Maybe Ed Sullivan show the next week. But
Tommy Lewis at last, I think, lives in Huntsville, and he's a reluctant celebrity.
He is reluctant.
Yeah, he doesn't like to talk about it, but occasionally he will, one of the great quotes of college football, I think, didn't he say, I'm just too full of Alabama or something to that effect?
Fully, that's right.
Yeah,
he came off the bench. That was in the, after the 53 season, I believe.
Magel returning a kickoff, and Lewis ran off the bench and tackled him, and, of course, it gave Rice a touchdown.
And Rice won anyway.
Yes.
And but the Rice had good teams. And they went to bowl games, and Jess Neely, not easy to win. You know, Rice is a school that also has had tough academics.
Yeah.
There's no place to hide the kids.
No, really good engineering
school. That's the big advantage that the state universities have. They have enough easy courses where they can keep the kids eligible. Not all state universities, but a good many of them.
That's right.
I don't want any. I can say, well, I didn't mean yours, somebody writes. Vice President of ESPN.
Good point. Good point. And then email, Bino. I wanted to read this one from a retired Naval Commander Chuck Rosecrans in Huntsville, Alabama, speaking of Tommy Lewis. He said, I have gained an appreciation for Bino Cook that I never had before. This stage is made for him, meaning the podcast. His knowledge of the history of the game is awesome. Hopefully some younger folks are listening and paying attention. If so, they might pick up on the fact that the game today is a result of those who have come before. I also appreciate your strong support of the Army-Navy game and your education of your listeners. I am not an academy grad, but that game is the highlight of the season for our men and women serving freedom throughout the world. Just wanted to thank you for making the season even more enjoyable. So that's
we thank you.
Yeah, that's very nice.
Nice.
Bino, I do have one other one. Came in. Thomas Remley wrote this, and he said he gave me the three things wrong with college football, which he listed as one. helmet-to-helmet hits.
I've been telling you.
Yeah.
Those helmets, you get the leather helmets back. We won't have all that.
The leather helmets.
Now they're talking about the helmets.
I know.
Very good.
Yeah. Number two, the BCS. He said not because of a lack of playoff, but the money in the BCS invents weak schedules, which is probably an interesting point. It is an interesting point. And then number three, he said the wrong with college football is Notre Dame, which is arrogant, entitled, and irrelevant. Now, his three things right in college football. Number one, Beano, who he says is in my Hall of Fame with Al McGuire and Peter Allis. And number two, the Song Girls, which I think we can all agree on. And then number three, the Huskers and their consecutive sellout streak and their record academic All-Americans. Cheers, Tom Renly, Nebraska class of 85. So there you
That's
go.
Great.
Yeah.
The number two reason, read that to me on the first three I want to come on the BCS.
Yeah, he said not because of the BCS, not because of the lack of playoff, but he thinks the money.
He's talking about the schedule. The 12th game.
Yeah.
The 12th game is the worst thing that happened for the fan.
Yes.
That's a good point. It's not the school. They get the money. They bring in somebody to beat every so often. It's a big upset. The fan is getting the shock that the 12th game.
Yes.
It's a disgrace what's going on. Very good observation.
Yeah.
As for Notre Dame, they're never irrelevant. Win or lose, people want to know about them. People who, they're the most disliked school by far.
Yes.
And the most liked. And you have to discuss Notre Dame.
Yes.
I get that. We get that all the time. Herb Street, he's pretty sharp, said Notre Dame's irrelevant. Win or lose, they're not irrelevant. It's Notre Dame.
Yes, I
agree.
And
if they lose, believe me, people are celebrating. Believe me, they are.
No, I agree.
And the other thing, what's different with Notre Dame now is that, generally speaking, the press liked Notre Dame overall. That's all changed. They left the CFA. That just exposed Notre Dame. The way they did it in the middle of the night, and they exposed Notre Dame, we're no different than anybody else. Notre Dame tries to tell you they're different in Alabama and Tennessee and USC. They're no different. They're no different. They want to win the national title.
Yes.
Period.
Yes. Beano, it's the end of the year, and I think over the course of the entire year, it is safe.
We fooled them. I mean,
yeah.
We should be, well, not so much you, but I should be in jail. I've been fooling these people for years. But all we want to say, we enjoy the people, emails, we get a kick out of it. And maybe
thrilled.
We are fooling you, but while we're doing that, we hope you enjoyed it and you get a few laughs.
Absolutely, and listeners can email us at my address, ivan.maisel, M-A-I-S-E-L, at ESPN3.com. Enjoy the bowl season. Enjoy the New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. Beano, I'm sure, will be celebrating New Year's Eve with Virginia Tech and Tennessee in the Chick-fil-A Bowl. And am I right?
Correct. And believe me, 58, at age 78, I'm not in demand by anybody.
Except for all of us.
Yes.
So for Beano Cook, this is Ivan Maisel. This has been the ESPNU College Football Podcast. Thanks for downloading us.
We'd like to thank you for listening to today's show. For more great podcasts, check out the Pod Center page at ESPNradio.com. Hey, college football fans, this podcast is brought to you by Citi. And whether it's football or finance, teamwork matters, which is why Citi is proud to present the 2010 Citi BCS National Championship Game.